This is PCJ Radio International. PCJ Radio International presents the longest-running international show, The Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Perron.
Everyone, it's very nice to have you with us for another edition of the program. Now, that wasn't our usual theme or any one of our usual themes. It was known as the Dance of the Cuckoos. Some of you probably already know what that's from, but in case you didn't, don't worry, because I will tell you about that in one little moment. First, let's begin with the Arthur Murray Dance Band. Many of you, or some of you, may be familiar with the Arthur Murray Dance School. They did release a couple of albums, which included their orchestra, and the liner notes are not the usual liner notes, like the musician's history of the recording or anything like that. No, it was dance moves. So here they are with La Pachanga. Pachanga, the Arthur Murray Dance Orchestra. Well, we began today's show with a piece of music called The Dance of the Cuckoos. This was the theme song to the legendary 20th century comedy duo of Laurel and Hardy. My fascination with Laurel and Hardy began in the late 1970s and early 1980s. I used to rush home from school because I knew that at 4:30 p.m. in the afternoon, Monday to Friday, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation would run the Laurel and Hardy Show. It was a 30-minute show that just featured some of their most famous short films that they made for the Hal Roach Studios in the 1920s and 30s. At one time, they were the most successful comedy team. Their films made millions and were shown all around the world, not just in the United States, but in Europe, including here in the Far East. There were so many comedians of the 1950s and 60s that were influenced by Laurel and Hardy. So today, I thought on today's program, we would pay a little tribute to this comedy duo. Now, as I said, they made hundreds of short films as well as feature films during the 1940s, which have become cinematic classics. But what is interesting is this is at a time when radio was taking off, and they didn't make too many radio appearances, except for the odd one every now and again. They did do a pilot for NBC radio in the 1940s that wasn't picked up, which is a great shame because from their previous radio work that they did for American radio, including Armed Forces Radio, they were quite brilliant even working in that medium. The same went for television. They made literally no television appearances. Oliver Hardy passed away in the late 1950s. Stan Laurel died in 1965. And when television started to boom in the United States after the Second World War, they literally made one television appearance. And that was appearing on Ralph Edwards' This Is Your Life. They did do an appearance for the BBC in the early 1950s, but that was just made up of a small bunch of shorts that they did for a special program, and that was it. They never ventured into television. There was discussion about them doing their own television series in the mid-1950s, but because of Oliver Hardy's health, the series never materialized, which is a great shame. So on today's edition of Happy Station, we're going to be paying a little audio tribute to the one and only Laurel and Hardy.
Let's take a chance to do a new dance. For I'm cuckoo and you're cuckoo. Sing tra la 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 la. All the folks have all gone wild. Oh, what a howdy do. Is it because two funny chaps thought of more something new? Side by side, you start to glide. Forget all your troubles, let everything slide. For I'm cuckoo and you're cuckoo. Sing tra la 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 la.
Laurel and Hardy singing their theme song, Dance of the Cuckoos. In 1987, I hosted a six-part radio series called Comedy Greats. We featured Benny Hill, the Marx Brothers, Jack Benny, including Laurel and Hardy. Now, believe it or not, finding radio work from Laurel and Hardy was rather difficult. The show was mainly made up of some classic clips from some of their sound films. But in 1987, I did come across from a collector in the United States who was a huge Laurel and Hardy fan, a rare radio appearance that they made for a show that was on NBC Radio that was later broadcast on Armed Forces Radio. And it's called The Marriage of Stan Laurel. It is rather fun, and you can tell this was done live because there are some mishaps that happen during the sketch, which also adds to the charm. So here it is, The Marriage of Stan Laurel. Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy on Happy Station.
Well, the justice of the peace lives right up here, Stanley. Just think, in a few minutes, you and Patsy will be one.
One what?
One husband and one wife.
Well, that makes two.
Oh, shut up.
Will you two can that chatter? I want to get this wedding over with.
Do you feel all right, sweetheart?
Uh-huh. I certainly do. I feel fine.
Not you, Patsy. Now, come on and let's go. Ouch, my foot. Will you watch where you're going?
Well, I can't see a thing with this veil on. You can't see a thing.
You don't wear the veil. The bride wears it. Here, put it on, Patsy.
Thank you, Wally.
Did you get her some orange blossoms for her hair like I told you to?
Well, I couldn't find the orange blossoms, so I got some oranges instead.
Yeah, real oranges, look.
Oh, so that's what's hanging in front of your eyes.
Uh-huh.
How do you keep them there?
She's got bags for them, I do.
Well, you keep still. Now, let's go in.
Ollie.
What?
I'm scared.
Scared of what?
Well, I'm going to marry Patsy. We've only been going steady for 12 years, and you know how it is.
Now, don't be nervous. Take a little shot of this.
What is it?
16-year-old prune punch. It'll bolster your right up. Here.
Thank you, Ollie. Oh, boy, that's good. Thank you, Ollie. Here's the bottle.
Well, where's the cork?
What cork?
The cork that was in the bottle.
Oh, I thought that was a prune pit, and I swallowed it.
Oh, say, will you please ring the bell and stop wasting my time?
Okay.
Ring it louder. We've got to wake the justice up.
What's the matter? Is he dead or something?
Here, I'll ring it. That's the way to do it. Oh!
What happened?
What's going on here? What's all the racket?
We'd like to get married if it's not too much trouble.
Not too much trouble? Getting that guy up at this hour of the night?
What are you squawking about? We're up.
The cork's up, too.
Now I can take my finger out of this bottle.
Well, as long as I'm up, come on in. Well, are you coming in or not?
Oh, yes,
sure,
yes. We'll
be right
we're
here.
Coming in, yeah.
Sure.
Now, which is which here?
Well, this is she, and that's it.
My goodness, young lady, where did you get that veil you're wearing?
From my father.
He keeps bees, Judge.
Young man, you're very fortunate to have a girl like this. My dear, you have lovely orange eyes.
Thank you, Judge. Have one?
No, thanks.
I'll have one, if you don't mind.
You can eat later.
Now, miss, I'll have to fill out this certificate. What's your name, please?
Patsy Moran.
What?
Moran. M-O-R-O-N.
Oh!
What's that for?
Now, you keep out of this. And now, what's your name?
My name? Laurel. But call me Stanley for short.
And where were you born?
Bridge, Minnesota.
Bridge, Minnesota?
Yeah. On the bridge, right between St. Paul and Minneapolis. You know, I'll never forget that morning. All the cars that were coming around,
and there was truck coming.
Will you keep quiet?
All right, now stand here before me.
Excuse me.
Well, let's go. I want to get back to bed. Now, young lady, you take this man to be your lawful wedded husband?
I do.
And you, Stanley for short, do you take this woman to be your lawful wedded wife?
I don't think so.
Why not?
I've taken a dislike to her.
You've taken a dislike to her?
Yep.
Oh!
Catch her, Judge. She's fainted.
Yeah, quick, get her some brandy.
I haven't got any brandy.
A beer will do.
You're a fine judge. No brandy.
Just a minute. Did you or did you not wake me up out of a sound sleep to marry you?
I don't remember.
And now you stand there and say you don't want to go through with it?
Well, I'm sorry I changed my mind. I couldn't help it.
Why, you little... I'm going to take you...
Come on, Stanley and Patson. Let's get out of here.
All right. Oh, Stanley, you brute.
Oh. I can't help it, Patsy.
Stanley.
What, Ollie?
You came out here to get married, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
You took poor little Patsy away from her mother, her home.
Yes, I know, but...
You stand her up at the altar. Only a cad would do that.
I'm sorry, Ollie.
Now, we're going back in there, and you're going to behave yourself.
Ollie.
What?
Give me another shot.
Here.
Thanks, Ollie. Oh, boy, that's good. Thank you.
Now kiss and make up. Oh, not me, Patsy.
Oh, so it's you. Oh, so it's you again, eh?
Now everything's all straightened out.
Come on.
Everything's all straight now, Judge. I've talked to Stanley.
Well, it better be. Come in. Now, stand before me. Young man, do you take this woman to be your lawful wedded wife?
I do.
Fine. Now, young woman, do you take this man to be your lawful wedded husband?
I should say not.
Why not?
I've taken a dislike to him.
Well, can you beat that?
Why, you two little whippersnappers? I'll take the both of you and read your neck.
Come on, let's get out of here. This is another fine mess you've got me into. Now, look, Patsy, you came out here to get married, didn't you?
Sure.
You took poor little Stanley away from me. You broke up my home. You brought him all the way here to Las Vegas.
Yeah, I know.
And when you get here, you leave him standing at the altar. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Now kiss and make up.
Oh.
Not me, Stanley. Now, come on and let's go in.
Ollie.
What?
How about another shot?
Not now.
Make it two.
Wait till after you're married.
Surprise?
Surprise? Why, you...
Calm down, Judge. Now, everything is all set.
Oh, it is, huh?
Yep.
Then step right in, folks.
Thank you, Judge.
Now, stand before me. Do you take this man to be your lawful wedded husband?
I do.
And do you take this woman to be your lawful wedded wife?
I do.
Then I won't marry you!
Why not?
Because I've taken a dislike to the whole bunch of you.
But, Judge!
Get out of here!
Well, it looks like back to the laundry for me.
Ollie, how about that shot you promised me? Remember?
I'm glad you reminded me. Here it is.
Laurel and Hardy, on the radio, from 1943. As I mentioned, actually, they did a pilot for NBC that wasn't picked up, which is a bit of a shame because, as you can tell, they made the transition from celluloid to radio quite extraordinary. A lot of fun to listen to that. All right, we're going to have a little bit of music. And when we come back, a very rare interview of Stan Laurel. But first, here's Marlene Dietrich and Rosemary Clooney, Too Old to Cut the Mustard.
He's too old to cut the mustard anymore. He's getting too old. He's too old to cut the mustard anymore. Once I kissed a millionaire, ran my fingers through his hair. The whole thing turned out pretty grim, 'cause none of his hair belonged to him. Too old, he's too old to cut the mustard anymore. He's getting too old, he's too old to cut the mustard anymore. A gent I know with a big sedan swore he was an army man, and he got dressed up fit to kill in the uniform he wore at the Bunker Hill. Mustard anymore. He's getting too old. He's too old to cut the mustard anymore. I entertained an actor I know. The moon was high and the lights were low. He said I'd like to play the scene, but it's time to drink my Ovaltine. He's too old to cut the mustard anymore. He's getting too old. He's too old to cut the mustard anymore. It seems that every man you meet wants to sweep you off his feet. But gals, before you do submit, make him show his birth certificate. Too old, he's too old to cut the mustard anymore. He's getting too old, he's too old to cut the mustard anymore.
Marlene Dietrich and Rosemary Clooney, that is, too old to cut the mustard. At the beginning of today's program, I was talking about a comedy series that I did in 1987 called Comedy Greats. And one of the comedians, well, two of the comedians that we did feature during that series was Laurel and Hardy. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about the series because it wasn't just merely me coming in and playing a bunch of comedy records. We would actually have special guests in. For example, the show that we did on Laurel and Hardy, my special guest was a newsreader for the CBC in Montreal by the name of Yvan Huneau, who actually was a fan of Laurel and Hardy. Other guests that I had were Peter J. Smith, who was the then British Consul General in Montreal, and Sir George Martin, who came on to talk about Peter Sellers. So that was the gist of the series, and it was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, the original master tapes no longer exist, and all I have are some excerpts, and I will post them very soon at the PCJ website, which, by the way, is www.pcjmedia.com. The other thing I mentioned earlier is that Laurel and Hardy made very few, actually only two, television appearances, one for the BBC in the early 1950s, and then in the late 1950s, for an American TV show called This Is Your Life with Ralph Edwards. And you can actually find that episode. It is floating around online because it is now in public domain. And it is interesting to watch. It really is interesting to watch. There were plans, as I mentioned, that to have them come and do their own TV series, but because of Oliver Hardy's health, the series never materialized, which is a great shame because I'm sure that if they had done a television series, it would have become a classic. There was a series that was syndicated in the 1970s and 80s called The Laurel and Hardy Show, and it was put together by a production company in the UK that featured a lot of their short films. The same company also did one for Charles Chaplin and Buster Keaton, and you know, I'd like to see those come out on home video, because they were they're really a lot of fun to watch. Laurel and Hardy rarely gave interviews, even at the height of their career in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. In the early 1960s, a reporter went to Stan Laurel's home in Hollywood, California. Now, Stan Laurel was an interesting guy because most Hollywood celebrities would not list their phone number. He would list his phone number. His phone number was listed in the telephone directory, and it was not uncommon for fans from all around the world to call him up and say, "How are you doing, Stan? I'm a fan. Would you have time for, you know, to get together for a drink or some tea?" And he would always oblige. He would always oblige. Some well-known people that did this were, for example, Dick Van Dyke. Dick Van Dyke, who was a huge, and still is a huge, Laurel and Hardy fan, said in an interview a few years ago that he called Stan Laurel up and went to his home. Jerry Lewis, the same thing. And so many other comedians that were emerging in the 1950s and 60s. But Stan Laurel did grant one interview. The interview is interesting to listen to, and I thought we'd broadcast it in full. It was available for a time on record, on an LP that came out in 1977. And the interview is just called Stan Laurel in His Own Words. So here it is.
Oh, I was born in England, in Ulverston, Lancashire. And my family were a theatrical family. So I've been associated with the business since I was born. My parents were in the dramatic business. My dad wrote shows and produced shows and also had a circuit of theaters around the north of England. So I was born in Lancashire, but I was raised in several parts, in Durham, around the Tyneside, and finally up in Glasgow, Scotland. I received most of my education. Well, I did start out very early. In fact, my dad wanted me to be in the front of the theater business. He'd been through a lot of hardships in his day. He had been with circuses and shows and what have you, so he felt it was a rough business for anybody, and he would prefer that I did odd jobs around the theater in Glasgow and other theaters, in the box office, taking care of the program and chocolate receipts and general utilities, if I say. I first started appearing on the stage and made appearance in some of the dramatic shows that appeared at the Metropole Theatre in Glasgow, and played little bits and parts of Newsboy or something. It was just to break me in, as you might say. But my dad wasn't too favorable of me doing it. But anyway, it was in my blood, and I didn't have much education. It was my own fault. I had every chance, but I don't know, the spirit of the theatre was in me, and education didn't mean it. It was more glamour. So anyway, I finally broke out as a boy comedian, which was quite popular those days. There were several boy comedians doing very well. So I started out in the music halls as a boy comedian. I wasn't too successful, however, because I'd had no experience and didn't have any material of any kind. In fact, I hadn't found myself anywhere. Didn't know just what kind of a comic I was or anything else, but I was just happy to be in front of the footlights. So anyway, my dad finally got me a job in a pantomime, Christmas pantomime. It was The Sleeping Beauty. So from there, I tried a little bit of music halls again, and then I went into a dramatic show, played a comedy part in it, and that folded up. So I finally drifted into the Fred Karno Company. That was Karno's London Comedians. And with the same outfit was Charlie Chaplin, many of the Karno stars. Well, he wasn't with that particular company when I first joined, but Karno had, several companies on the road. And Charlie would jump from one to another, as we all would be sent to different assignments. Well, finally, Chaplin joined our troupe, and after about a year, we were booked to come over to America. I was in 1910, and we were to open at the Percy Williams Theater called the Alhambra. After that, we were supposed to go to Hammerstein's for 2 weeks. But after the first show at Percy Williams' house, the management of Hammerstein's canceled our appearance. The show was a flop. Well, the trouble was we'd never seen the show. We weren't familiar with it. And we were supposed to rehearse the show coming over on the boat. Well, we had terrible storms. We took 12 days crossing. And being a cattle boat, the quarters were very uncomfortable, of course. And everybody was ill, seasick, so no rehearsals were ever gotten to. So, of course, we arrived in Monday morning, and the scenery was all brand new. And we weren't familiar with the show at all. So, consequently, it was just a big mix-up when we got out there. So Percy Williams was very pleased with the troupe, and we played four more theaters for him. Then we were deciding to go back to England. We'd even written home, said we'd be back home, you know, big success. So anyway, during the playing of the Williams houses, Marcus Lowe was opening a house, a brand new theater in New York called the Million Dollar Theater. It was later called the National. What it is now, or even if it's still there, I don't know. Anyway, at that time, he had a little theater in Fall River. So he sent the troupe down there for 3 days. And if they made good, he was going to put us on the opening show of the new Million Dollar Theater. Well, we didn't do the show that we came over with. We picked the one that we were familiar with. That was the Night in an English Music Hall, Mumming Birds, as we call it in England. And the show was a terrific hit. Of course, we were all at home with it. We knew every bit of it, you see. So we played a week. They held us over. So, of course, naturally, we opened the National Theater, or the Million Dollar Theater at that time, with big success. Then from there, we went to William Morris, the American Music Hall. And we ran at the American Music Hall for 6 weeks. We did a different show every week. We had a repertoire of shows, and including the one that we flopped in. We'd all gotten together and really became a success. So anyway, from there we went to the American Theater in Chicago for Mars. We played there 3 weeks. Then we came back to the Plaza on Fifth Avenue, New York, and we played there 3 weeks. Then we went to Philadelphia, and we opened the new Nixon Erdlinger Theater, and we played in Philadelphia for 12 weeks. And then we started out on the Sullivan and Considine circuit. That was a circuit that came to the coast. So it was during that trip that Max Sennett saw Chaplin. For a couple of years after that, they were negotiating. And finally, on the last trip, which I think was 1913, they played the Karno shows on the S&C time. I think they had 3 or 4 straight runs. Babe wasn't serious, you know, he loved to play. He didn't hold much interest in the production of the picture. I'd never see him between pictures. We'd call up and say, when do we start or when do we sort? I think our success in that situation was due to the fact They were never mixed socially. There was never any jealousy between the team because of Babe's attitude that he left everything to me. He was very happy to know that he didn't have to be worried or have any responsibility at all. He wouldn't accept any responsibility. Oh, they were marvelous days. It was really delightful. Well, I just, correspondence is about all I can do. And the television, correspondence, friends dropping in, little card game now and then. Well, I'm very happy and content. I've been very fortunate. Yes, a lot of happy memories.
Stan Laurel, in his own words, if you do a search on the internet for any Laurel and Hardy film, their shorts, as well as some of their feature films, you'll be able to find them free of download. Many of them have gone into public domain. So do go and check it out, and you'll just see the genius of these two comedians. Now, with this today, it got me thinking that there are some other legendary comedians from the early days of cinema for the 1930s and 40s that also did radio, but rarely. And we're going to be featuring next week on the program some recordings of the Marx Brothers. The Marx Brothers also did some radio work in the 1930s for the MGM Movie Parade. The MGM Movie Parade was a series that was syndicated by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer to radio stations across the United States. And what it was to highlight some of their big films. It was like they released this series, and they would be featuring one film, and it would the actors would come together and redo parts of the film and sing parts of the songs, and they were repackaged for radio. So next week on the show, we're going to bring you Duck Soup, one of the classic films from the Marx Brothers, with a very rare radio recording that was made in 1933, which is really a lot of fun to listen to. That's the only thing I can say. It also features not just the Marx Brothers, but their sidekick, Margaret Dumont, a woman who appeared in almost every Marx Brothers film. And she was a grand lady of character actresses. That's the only thing I can really say about it. And what's interesting is this recording is the four Marx Brothers when Zeppo was still part of the team. Time now for more music. Here's Fleetwood Mac and Little Lies on your program, Happy Station, from PCJ Radio International.
Close my eyes.
Fleetwood Mac and Little Lies here on your program, Happy Station. If you wish to contact us, our email address is very simple. It's hs@pcjmedia.com. That's hs@pcjmedia.com. Last week on the show, I mentioned that I had a bit of an emergency with the computer that I use for email. The hard drive crashed, and it's taken me forever to reinstall and reformat everything after I replaced the hard drive, which I've done. And the email that you have sent is coming in slowly but surely. Something like over 8,000 emails started popping into the computer after I put the settings back to the way they should. But they're not coming in the order that they were sent. That's the problem. Some of them are coming in from 2008 that I'd forgotten about, and including mixed up with more recent ones. And there was one here that came in, actually it was a request actually from somebody from 2010. And we're going to play it right now. Yes, 3 years later. But as they sometimes say, better late than never. Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass and Tijuana Taxi. Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, going out by request from a couple of years ago. We just got it. Tijuana Taxi. Just a couple of little program notes. Last week on Happy Station, on Media Network, our guest was somebody who was a guest on one of the live shows that we did for Happy Station, Michael Stevenson in Australia. And he was our guest to talk about a medium wave antenna that we sent him to review, and you can catch that review now. You can also catch all other PCJ programs, Focus Asia Pacific, Jazz for the Asking, The Kelly Alexander Show, Switzerland in Sound, Vintage Media Network with Jonathan Marks and Deanna Janssen, and some special programs that we've done by going to our website, www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. And since you're going to be online, hopefully, I don't think there's any other way you can surf the net if you're not online, do add us on Facebook. Just do a search for PCJ Radio and PCJ Media and click on the group and come and join in. And you'll find, of course, a lot of very interesting people and some well-known people and well-known figures, I should say, in the world of international broadcasting during our Facebook discussions. Yes, we have a lot of very interesting and lively Facebook discussions, so come in. And, usually At certain points of the day, I am there. So if you do see me as online in the group, you know, don't be afraid. Don't be shy. Add me as one of your friends and we can chat back and forth. Always welcomed to talking to new people around the world, because it's talking to new people that open your horizons to find out what, you know, how they live and what they do and everything else. So yes, I'm very friendly. I don't bite. Well, not unless you want me to, anyway. Time now for more music. This is a song that was originally made famous by Jimmy Cliff. It's considered a reggae classic, but the version that we're going to take a listen to is by Desmond Decker. You can get it if you really want.
You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. Succeed at last. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Persecution, you must fear. We don't lose, you gotta get to sheep. You've got your mind set on a dream. Succeed at last. Don't you know me? Listen, Rome was not built in a day. Opposition will come your way, but the hotter the battle you see, is the sweeter the victory. Now, you can get it if you really want. You can get it. You can get it if you really want, but you must try and try. You'll succeed at last.
You can get it if you really want, composed by Jimmy Cliff, that they're performed by Desmond Decker, who also had a hit with the song in 1970. All right, time now for one more piece of music before we bid you adieu. And I thought we'd have a little bit of an instrumental by jazz legend Wes Montgomery. This is a recording that he made featuring the orchestra of Klaus Ogerman with an arrangement by Oliver Nelson. And there's actually a little bit of Jimmy Smith in there. It's a song, actually, that was written by John Phillips of the Mamas and Papas. It's one of Mamas and Papas' most famous songs, California Dreaming. But here is a really nice, smooth jazz version. Wes Montgomery playing the Mamas and Papas classic, California Dreaming. Well, we are now out of time. Before we go, once again, if you wish to contact us with a request or suggestion, please do. Our email address is very simple. It's hs@pcjmedia.com. That's hs@pcjmedia.com. Don't worry, our email is working fine now, so I won't be receiving it in the year 2025, unless you're really lucky. And, of course, you can listen to this program again, as well as all past editions, by going to our website, www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com, where you can listen to this program again, as well as all the other feature programs from PCJ Radio International. And pretty soon I'll be making an announcement on our own shortwave relay station that we're currently constructing. A few weeks ago, we needed to have a 5-kilowatt auxiliary transmitter, which is still having the final touches put onto it. Then it'll be shipped here, and then some time before we get it set up. But the construction work for this kind of thing is not easy. That's the only thing I can tell you. I think since we started construction, from the moment that the bulldozers moved and shifted the first amount of earth, my hair has gone completely gray. It has. It really is not an easy thing to do. Anyway, we'll have more on that, of course, much later on. Anyway, that's it. That's all. So until next time, friends, this is Keith Parent wishing you well, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.